on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. And statewide on Civic Radio. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making, and you want history, you got a lot of it yesterday. You got some things yesterday that will be studied in textbooks and in high schools and college 100 years from now, and you lived right through it. We talk about it today. It turns out, reported by the Washington Post, that the Justice Department and the FBI are investigating the taking of nuclear documents by Donald Trump against the law out of the White House, unsecured, in Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago is supposedly his home, but it's a club. It's a huge area. It's not just one home. He has apartments in it, and he has documents in different places, in the safe, in the basement. It's accessible to a lot of people, and it turns out that some of them were nuclear documents. The second thing that happened today, Merrick Garland called Donald Trump's bluff. Donald Trump and Merrick Garland were playing Texas Hold'em. Trump made a big bet. He made a big bet by saying that the FBI was out to get him. They planted evidence. He lied about a lot of things, and the Republican Party backed him up. Merrick Garland came over the top, went all in. He said, I raise all in. All in. Merrick Garland went to court, and he asked for permission for the Justice Department to release the search warrant and the property receipt, the inventory. Trump had been complaining that they were keeping it secret. What Trump and his allies did not tell everybody was that the law was that they could reveal it, they could publish it, they could Xerox it, they could email it, they could fax it to any newspaper, any TV station, even just their own, i.e. Fox, that kind of thing. But they didn't do that. And Merrick Garland on his own couldn't do it. So Merrick Garland is going to a court. He filed already. And he said, give me permission. The court can do that, you know. Court can do that, you know. Court issued an emergency order. It said, I want to know what Donald Trump's reaction to this is. Trump has till 3 p.m. today, Friday. Today's Friday, 3 p.m. That would be 2 p.m. our time, Milwaukee time. The 3 p.m. was East Coast time, so 2 p.m. our time. Trump's lawyers have to file some kind of a document, or at least to tell Merrick Garland whether they oppose it or not. Now, you might think it would be, well, what, awkward, shameful for them to have complained for a couple of days that Garland was keeping a secret, and then when he wants to publicly disclose it, come back in and say, no, we oppose it. You think that there's a feeling of shame, do you? You think there's a feeling of somehow even slight embarrassment or remorse? None whatsoever. None whatsoever. The word is that Trump immediately hired outside counsel, not the band of hacks who's been representing them, and they are considering opposing it. Opposing it. Opposing it. Merrick Garland gave a great statement. The statement, quote, I personally approve the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter after the required finding that there was probable cause that a crime had been committed. Very dignified, very straightforward. He personally ordered it. He personally signed off on it. He personally signed off on it. So we will know by 2 p.m. Milwaukee time. That will be in the afternoon programming of this radio station. We will know this afternoon whether Trump opposes it. Now, if he opposes it, that's chutzpah. I mean, that really is. You know the definition of chutzpah. Guy kills his parents, and then he asks the judge for mercy because he's an orphan. That's Trump. I mean, quite frankly, that is Trump. On the side, it's just come out, and this is fascinating to me, that, you know, there's a thing called Trump World. Now, a lot of them are people you would know, you know, Rudy Giuliani and this one and that one, the kids, the family, and that kind of thing. But there's a wider group of people, and it's not just, you know, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and the Three Percenters and the whatever, whatever, although it includes that too, but people who are in the legislature and in the Congress. In the Congress, people like Scott Perry, people like Gymnasium Jim GYM Jordan, people like Marco Rubio, people like Cruz, people like Lindsey Graham. And Trump World is collectively urging people to cool down the fiery rhetoric. The threats of murder, the physical threats, the complaining, the lying, cool it down. Why? Because there may be, quote, some more bad news coming, end quote. Well, yes, there is more bad news coming. People originally thought the FBI was going in to get documents, classified documents. You know, when you say classified documents, everybody yawns because the vast majority of things that are classified would make you yawn. Anything that research that the CIA does and the Defense Department does on, for instance, a foreign country could very well end up being classified. People overclassify, just put classified. And that could have, to, you know, the economic projections for Romania for the next 5 years. Okay, you know, you fall asleep. However, there are things, the word classified applies to a lot of things. There are various levels of secrets. There's secrecy. There's top secret. There's eyes only. That means it can only be seen in the eyes of the president and perhaps a few other people who are designated. But then there are classifications even above that, and I don't know the names of all of them. But one of them would be, for instance, the codes that it would take to launch a nuclear weapon by the United States. The other one would be the codes that Russia would need, which we have stolen through, I'm sure, and I'm saying this without direct knowledge, but we had a weasel in his inner circle, Putin's inner circle, for years until Trump became president and the CIA got worried about his safety and extricated him. But there will be targets of nuclear attack, targets of sustainability of civilization. In other words, what could we withstand in the first week, the first month? I mean, all this stuff is gamed out. And one reason we have had no nuclear war is because people on both sides understand this, understand that it could be the end of civilization. But these documents exist, and they exist electronically, and they exist on paper. There are very few people who know them. Every commanding officer of a submarine, of a submarine in the U.S. Navy, knows what it would take to A, receive an order to launch a nuclear weapon from under the sea, and B, what it would take to do it for his own boat. Call a submarine a boat, a cruiser a destroyer a ship, because cruisers and destroyers sail on the surface. And they are, somebody breaks a bottle of champagne and they're commissioned. I think they also commission submarines now. They call them boats in the vernacular. In any event. Merrick Garland stood tall. He's gone up in my estimation. I had always thought he was a little bit gingerly kind of creeping around this, but he is not. So we will know at 2 p.m. Now, what does it mean that even a former president took nuclear documents, nuclear weapon documents out of the White House? First of all, some of his supporters saying, well, he declassified them. It's just that he didn't tell anybody, but he declassified them. He did it verbally. Well, let me tell you something. The president can declassify a lot of things. There's some things he can't. There's also a thing called the Espionage Act. And the Espionage Act is not subject to, it doesn't even require that a document be classified. The president can't declassify anything to avoid the Espionage Act. What is the purpose of taking nuclear documents? There's only one purpose, and that is to sell them. Trump is not going to build a nuclear weapon in Mar-a-Lago. He wouldn't know how, and the minute he tried to hire a scientist, it wouldn't do any good, and why would he do it? He didn't do it because he likes reading them at night. He doesn't read. The only reason you can do it, you do it, is to boast about it and use it to enrich yourself. There are a few countries in the world that would be interested in that, and they would be very interested in it. Russia and China are two. Iran is another one. But there are others as well. ISIS would be very interested, not because they know anything about nuclear weapons, but if they could put it in the hands of someone who did, an Iranian or a Pakistani or somebody in China or Russia, and accomplish their objectives, they would. What I am very concerned about, when this first broke that they were looking for documents, and I raised the issue last week that part of it could be nuclear weapons, I discounted it initially because he would have to, only purpose would be to sell them, which would be a felony under the Espionage Act, regardless of classification, regardless of whether he was president or not. It was inconceivable to me that he would do it. But he's in tougher financial shape than you think, because the Ruskies may not be funding him the way they were before. And he may be desperately trying to show he's relevant. And he, remember, he met with the Ruskies in the White House with no American there, no staff, no congressman, nothing. He doesn't have to mail them to the Ruskies. He doesn't even have to email them to the Ruskies. A Ruskie could come to Mar-a-Lago. They could have coffee, and he could say, the documents you're interested in are on the counter there. And the Ruskie, when he leaves the room, has a phone, and he simply takes pictures of them and then walks out with his phone, and there's no trail. This is very, very serious. Merrick Garland did everything in his power to retrieve these short of a search warrant. It was essential that search warrant be issued and executed. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
And direct, our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, this country has enemies at various levels. Just has come out that Iran, which is a terror state, designated as a terror state, very close to building a nuclear weapon itself, it somehow slipped through the cracks. It was wrong, and it will be an instrument of jihad for Iran, the worst instrument you can imagine. And now it turns out that it has put out bounties for the assassination of some American officials. They put out a bounty for the assassination of John Bolton. He's a former head of the NSA and also former Secretary of the United Nations and a conservative in the Trump administration, although he left the administration on bad terms because he turned on Trump at the end. And Crooked Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State. He has $1 million bounty on him. Now, within us, within the family, I have very low regard for Mike Pompeo and for John Bolton. And I have a personal relationship with John Bolton because I went to school with him and we overlapped for 3 years. And I'll tell you about that. But they're Americans. They serve in American administration. Any foreign adversary that wants to kill them, we must kill first. We will stand up for our government. We are not going to put up with this. We're not going to put up with this. The assassin that they initially hired is a guy named Shahram Pourasafi, S-H-A-H-R-A-M-P-O-O-R-S-A-F-I. He's a member of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard, Sadly, the statute that they're looking at him for, and by the way, he's at large, and I want to tell you about that. The statute only provides for a maximum 10-year sentence for being hired interstate to in one state to kill somebody in another state. I don't know why it's not attempted murder, and it would be under state law. These are the federal statutes. How about the states getting involved in this? And they increase it if the guy is hired in one country to kill somebody in another country. So you could say federally, this guy was technically hired in Iran because he's a member of the Iran Islamic Revolutionary Guard to kill somebody in the United States. But Jake Sullivan, the NSA director, gave a statement on television. He said, we informed Iran that we will retaliate if they attempt something like this. We will retaliate. John Bolton was a year behind me in college. We were both members as students of the Connecticut Intercollegiate Student Legislature. That's where I went to school. And it was sort of like a boys' state for college kids. And we drafted legislation. It was a lot of fun. I was the state chairman, and he was the head of our college delegation. You think of him as a bushy little walrus type of guy. Well, he didn't have a mustache back then, but he was absolutely as buttoned down and kind of weird and strange and conservative then when he was 18, 19, 20, 21, as he is right now. Didn't surprise me to see him go to the extreme right or the extreme right when he got into politics. Now, let me say something else. Shahram Pourzafi, we had a undercover agent offer to commit the assassination to kind of lure him into a case against him. And just so you know, and nobody listening to this would ever do this, but if you go into a bar somewhere and you say, you know, I'd like to pay 10 grand to somebody to kill so-and-so, the odds are overwhelming that the guy that comes forward will be an undercover cop. It's overwhelming. Never do it. It's immoral. But not only is it immoral, people have this covered. It never gets secret. They will get you. But what kills me is that Shahram Pourzafi apparently got suspicious and disappeared. And he's in the United States right now at large. And he has been promised 300, 500 grand to kill John Bolton and $1 million to kill Mike Pompeo. Now, I have a question. The minute that it was clear he was going to do this, why was he not executed? Why did not a member of the CIA or the FBI simply meet with him and take him out? Now, you may think that's extreme. I'm going to tell you something, and I hope you read this. I have written several novels. My most recent novel is called Milwaukee Jihad, J-I-H-A-D, Milwaukee Jihad. And it was published, it came out in January, but it anticipated a lot of this. And in it, a small committee self-selected of the Congress meet and decide to authorize a woman who is a top CIA agent to use deadly force when necessary outside of the judicial process. And I enjoyed writing it. It's an interesting account. If in our democratic structure, what happens if we have adversaries that are so lethal, and they could be cartel members, they could be Islamist terrorists, jihadist terrorists, that when you try to go through the process and arrest them, witnesses get killed along the way, jurors get either killed or threatened, people get suspicious and disappear, and we have them around the country right now. What would happen if a top agent, a woman, got into this and didn't wait for judicial process? So Milwaukee Jihad, J-I-H-A-D, a lot of history in it. And it's available wherever you want to get it, Amazon, anywhere else. But I think you'll find it interesting. And you'll see the effects of what would happen in the United States if we did, even though we're a democracy, even though we're a vibrant capitalist democracy, that occasionally, if you have a guy like Shahram Pourzafi saying he's going to kill two people of a presidential administration, then he gets cold feet and disappears where you're trying to, quote, develop a case, end quote, or, quote, you know, tape him to get many admissions. What would happen if Audrey Knapp, who is the CIA agent described in this novel, had met with him? And the answer that Shahram Pourzafi would have been carried out on a stretcher. So, Milwaukee Jihad, by me, Matt Flynn, get it. I think you'll enjoy it. If you enjoy the history on this show and the discussions and all of this, what would happen in a kind of a counter history if we in the United States, in a very extreme case, very limited case, decided to not let the Shahram Pourzafis escape? Going to break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, the Democrats in the legislature, the Wisconsin legislature, have done something very good. I want to recognize it. They're in a pitifully small minority, even though Democrats get 50 or more percent of the votes for legislature in the state. They have one third of the seats in the assembly. It's called gerrymandering. It's been upheld by Republican judges who are looking out for the Republican Party and not for our Constitution. And that's a subject for another day. When you have that kind of gerrymandering, you don't have a true democracy. But in any event, there's some things the Democrats can do in the legislature. And they just called and demanded a comprehensive audit of the Gableman 2020 election probe. And here's why. This is great. When Robin Voss was opposed in the election this week by Adam Steen down in Mount Pleasant, Racine area, and barely beat him, he beat him by about 2.5 points, I think, even though he's an incumbent. And this guy Steen just came blowing in the wind out of left field, absolutely no credentials to be serving anywhere in government. And yet he got almost 49% of the vote, about 49%, because of the Trump endorsement. Gableman, Michael Gableman, who'd been paid by Trump, paid by Voss rather, to blackmail, to get rid of the Trump blackmail for well over a year, 11 grand a month, over $1 million's been spent, including 250 grand in sanctions, penalties, for Gableman's misconduct in court with a judge and opposing counsel, a woman. There's no gratitude. They said in Washington, they say in Madison, if you want a friend, buy a dog. If you want loyalty, buy a dog. Well, Gableman stabbed us in the back, got all that money, and he did a robocall for Adam Steen. Robocall or one of these automatic dial things, you pick it up and you hear this voice go, you know, for a limited time, you can buy this, you can buy that, or vote for Jones, vote for Smith, that kind of thing. This robocall said, quote, this isn't Gableman's voice, by the way, that he taped. Robin Voss never wanted a real investigation into the 2020 election in Wisconsin. He never wanted a real investigation into the 2020 election in Wisconsin. Gableman said that whatever he did was in spite of Voss, and then Gableman didn't do anything. So maybe that was in spite of Voss. He went to the New Berlin Library because he couldn't afford a computer. He's making 11 grand a month. He used a public library in the or a public computer in the New Berlin Library. You can buy a computer. You can buy it for under a grand. I mean, you probably buy it, what, for $500? I don't know what. I mean, I haven't bought a computer in a while. You can buy a computer if you get 11 grand a month. He didn't do it. He said that he didn't know much about elections, so he wanted to bone up on them. And apparently he wanted to hold off buying a computer to get the time use of, what, $500? But why are you giving 11 grand a month to a guy who doesn't know much about elections, can't afford to buy his own computer? I mean, this day and age, a guy like Gaveman doesn't have a computer. Maybe he doesn't want something traced. I don't know. Voss, right after Gableman turned on him like a dog, after Voss won by a hair breadth over Adam Steen on Tuesday, put out a statement and said, quote, Gableman is an embarrassment to leadership, and the caucus will meet, and the leadership will meet next week to decide what to do. Tony Evers came out with a statement and said, quote, Voss should fire Gableman. If he doesn't, we'll never get over the last election. What do you do with this dog's breakfast when taxpayer money of over $1 million has gone out and now another $250,000 for, you know, fines, penalties, sanctions for misconduct in court? Why are the taxpayers paying for all this, by the way? Why am I paying for it? Why are you paying for it? If you take over $1 million and there's no sunset on it, and they've already found that there is no fraud, and Gableman already said he didn't find any fraud, and they want to overturn the election because they want Trump back in and not Joe Biden. Well, people have spoken. The people have spoken. 7 million more people voted for Biden than Trump nationally. I think Biden won by more than 60 electoral votes, and Biden won Wisconsin by 20,000 votes. You know, Hillary Clinton lost Wisconsin in 2016 by 27,000 votes. The same rules applied then. You know, there were drop boxes, all this kind of stuff, absentee voting. Not a single Republican says we should overturn 2016. In 2020, the same procedures used. They want to overturn Biden, but they do not want to overturn any of the Republican congressmen who were elected in the same election. They don't want to overturn Gallagher, Stein, or Steen. They don't want to overturn him. They don't want to turn Tiffany. Only Biden. This is fraud. This is flat out fraud. And to go into taxpayer money for over $1 million, including fines and penalties for misconduct, simply to appease or buy off Donald Trump is fraud. We have been defrauded by this amount of money. The Republican Party should pay for this. Or Voss or Gableman should pay for it. But if you had $1 million judgment against each of them, I believe they would be judgment proof. I would believe that they don't have the money, quite frankly. I do not believe by their demeanor and looking at them that they live much beyond paycheck to paycheck, frankly. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they should pay for it. But you can have a joint and several. It's called a joint and several judgment, where you get issue a judgment for over $1 million that's been paid out, and the $250,000 for fines and penalties, get the total amount with interest. And then you say either the Republican Party, Voss or Gableman or all three, let them fight, we'll pay this. Now, they'll all turn on each other like dogs, but the Republican Party has money and they would have to pay it. Why aren't we doing that? For instance, why doesn't Josh Call bring that suit? A good reason for Josh Call not bringing that suit is because Republican judges have said this is okay. This is okay. It benefits the Republican Party. Now, could Josh Call go into federal court? You'd have to have jurisdiction. They would argue that there is not jurisdiction. I would argue that we are guaranteed under the Constitution a Republican form of government. Now, Republican in small r does not mean a Republican Party, just like the fact that we're a democracy, small d, does not mean that we're a democratic democracy. What we have is we don't have a king. People elect their leaders, and that's what's called the republic, and they do it in democratic elections where you have now one man, one vote, and they're conducted honestly. And that's what we're used to. The Republican Party is calling all that into question. Everything that you remember from elections, from a kid, from the first election you ever voted in. I went and voted last Tuesday. I vote on the east side of Milwaukee in a church, not a basement, like sort of a first floor of an adjunct building, St. Mark's it's called. Same wonderful people, largely, you know, middle-aged elderly ladies, a couple of fellas. And it's quite social. It's kind of neat. You know, technically, we don't know what their party affiliation is. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are independents. But you have to, with me, I've been going there for, what, 40 years, 30 years? All right. What is your name? They know my name. What is, I have to tell them my name. Okay. And what is your address? It's right there in front of them. But I tell them the address. And they go, we need to see your photo ID. I show them my driver's license. Every time. It's clean as a whistle. This thing is the genius of our democracy. There are no soldiers around. There's no machine guns around. There's no violence and killing in line. There are not gangs that lay in wait, like in Kenya or Nigeria or something. The Republicans are reverting to that kind of thing, to that kind of monstrosity. And that's what's going to happen down the line. Now, this is kind of a, you know, quiet area, but in the larger cities, voters are harassed. So let's get the million out of the Republican Party. Let's make that clear. This is fraud to have taxpayers pay for this, and the Democrats were right to call for a comprehensive audit. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, the story that came out of Florida that amazed even me. It shocked even me. This shocks the conscience. It's an example of what happens in Ron DeSantis' Florida. There was a teacher in an elementary school named Michael James, J-A-M-E-S, 61 years old, originally from Alabama. And this is a part of Florida that sounded like it's around the Pensacola area, more conservative area, western Florida, northwestern Florida, up near the Alabama border. And he just resigned. He just resigned from the school he taught at, the OJ, it's not OJ, it's OJ Semmes, J. Semmes, S-E-M-M-E-S, Elementary School, the Semmes Elementary School, because of the following. He teaches special ed. He teaches kids with kind of extreme disabilities. My wife was a speech and language pathologist for 30 some odd years, and she worked a lot with Down syndrome. Children with Down syndrome, children with autism, and it's a very, very tough job. Anyway, that's what he did, and it was an area that was almost, it was largely African-American and almost exclusively. So he had all these African-American special needs kids, and he was an excellent teacher. So one day, he used to put photos up on the bulletin board there, and one day he put up photos of Martin Luther King Jr., Colin Powell, Harriet Tubman, great anti-slavery advocate and great suffragette, and George Washington Carver. He was an African-American scientist who worked a lot on, the uses and the biology of peanuts, and there was an essential body of work he did. The school district sent an agent to his classroom and tore the pictures down and said they were, quote, age inappropriate, end quote. He had taught special ed for 15 years at the Semmes Elementary School, and he quit. He said, I am astounded. I'm a teacher. I've taught here 15 years. And the state of Florida under DeSantis is now applying what they call critical race theory and confusing it with age-appropriate issues on sexuality. And there are age-appropriate issues on sexuality. There's no question about it, what you teach and what you say. Certain things you don't do in elementary school, you might do in high school, and certain things you wouldn't do till college. But to say it's age-inappropriate for African-American special ed students sitting there to see up on a blackboard or a bulletin board pictures of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Colin Powell, Harriet Tubman, and George Washington Carter is disgusting. It's purely race-driven. And what DeSantis has done is given license to school districts to impose their own views on race or anything else under the grounds of, quote, age inappropriateness, end quote. This has gotten out of hand, and it is beyond disgusting. We go to the lines. We have Gary of Sussex, my friend. You're on the line. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind today, Gary of Sussex?
I agree with you that I didn't call about this subject, but I just want to talk about, I agree with when you were talking about when you went to vote and you went and it went smooth as can be. And I agree with you 100%. I did the same thing. A bunch of old ladies out there, and they know who I am. They're my neighbors. They still have to ask me, and I have to sign and the whole shoot and shebang. Now, the point that I want to make is showing an ID was such a big thing. For 10 years, people fought it and fought it and fought it. Oh, how horrible and how disenfranchising you're doing to poor people. But you know something, once you get used to the ID, it was fine. Everybody walked in and showed your ID. Now, as far as what you were saying just a minute ago about this teacher being or quitting and everything like that, yeah, that sucks. I agree. It's not good. But this is what we got ourselves into with this critical race theory. No matter where you go, if you're in a conservative area and somebody starts putting up different things because of everybody's so afraid of the critical race theory being taught in schools, as far as conservative Republicans, this is what we end up with. And then, let's see, there was one other point that I just kind of lost for a second, but I do want to make one little point that there's a friend, you and I have a similar friend, Mordecai Lee. Obviously, you must know him from teaching, correct?
Yeah, I do know him. What about him?
Well, he's just one of my customers and friend of mine. So I just mentioned, I said, do you know Matt Flynn? Oh, yeah, you know. All good. All good. It wasn't bad the way you hesitated there for a second. No, it was all good. Yeah, he's a customer of mine.
Yeah,
so.
Mordecai and I were on the panel for the Belling Show. We were on TV on Sunday mornings. So, he's a good guy. Say hello. Let me respond to what you have to say, and then we'll get onto the lines to the next caller. Two things. One on voter ID. I support voter ID, and I have, and I think that it's important because it's a minor intrusion, but basically as the country gets bigger, it's a useful thing, and nobody's really contesting it anymore. The second thing, though, is on critical race theory, Gary, I disagree. It's hard being a special ed teacher. My wife was a special ed teacher. You have these kids in there. You can have a child with autism. You can have a child with Down syndrome and learning disabilities, and you can have behavioral problems. And, you know, something, keeping their attention and getting 2 minutes of work time with them is amazing. And to have pictures up there of heroes in their community, this is a black school, basically, is wonderful. And to let local yokels like that interpret critical race theory is that you got to take down the pictures of Dr. Martin Luther King and Colin Powell and Harriet Tubman and George Washington and Carver. Hey, come on, guy. Come on. This is an abuse.
No, I agree.
Anyway, thanks for calling. You're a principal conservative. We're going to Millie of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Millie. What's in your mind today?
Hi. The teacher had a picture of Barack Obama that they removed from the wall.
Who told you that, Millie?
So there because were black that's not historical in the, I'm reading it right here in the local Pensacola News Journal. I was sitting down in one of the children's chairs cutting something out, said the teacher, and I turned around and saw the behavioral analyst colleague taking down the pictures. She'd also seized a picture of former President Barack Obama that I had placed near my desk because there wasn't room on the bulletin board. She picked it up and said, "You don't need to put this up either. The kids are too young." And he thought, this is the first black president. And the teacher said he thought it was weird when he was getting his classroom ready that two colleagues walked into his room and started looking. One was a behavioral analysis. Another was a behavior coach. And they came in and just started going through his classroom looking to see what was there. He said he even had a Pledge of Allegiance on the bulletin board that they removed.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, Millie, thanks for calling in with the full thing.
Yeah.
The version from the Pensacola paper I saw, and it must be because the Barack Obama picture was on his desk and on the bulletin board. But on the bulletin board, they took down Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Harriet Tubman, Colin Powell, and George Washington Carver. And you've just given us the excellent information that he had a photo on his desk, which, you know, teachers can do, of a president, for Pete's sake. What if he had a picture of Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan? Who cares? You know, these are presidents of the United States. Plus, Millie, these are kids who are special needs. Keeping discipline and keeping the attention of special needs kids for an hour is an art form. It's very, very difficult working with them and to make them feel somewhat comfortable and proud of themselves, because a lot of these kids are made to feel not proud of themselves because of the way society is set up. So this guy, Michael James, 61 years old, he'd been teaching for 15 years, and you're right. These people come in like Putin's agents and they go, no, you can't have what? A picture of any black person? Come on. And this is America. This is America. I mean, let's say that when Barack Obama was president, he had a picture up of the president. You had that in all the U.S. attorney offices, FBI offices, and post offices. You can post presidential pictures. The point I'm making, and I'm really indebted to Millie for actually Googling that article and reading more than I had read, because I had not known that they also took away a picture that he had on his desk, which frankly is his property. They had no right to take that down. Take that out of there. Absolutely no right at all. No right whatsoever. But to then take down on the bulletin board some of the most eminent people in our history, and then a recent president, which was his property on his desk, all under the guise of critical race theory, and then having a couple of agents come in and go, you know, from the school district, you know, and colleagues, and what, strip any vestige of African-American reference under critical race theory in a learning disabled classroom? That's disgusting. Going to break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me.